This is the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. Here, we talk about all things Minnesota sports. Wild, Wolves, Vikings, Twins. We cover it all. We try to take a deep dive. We try to break down players' development, how the trade market looks, how our GMs are evolving over time, and everything all Minnesota sports right here. Welcome back to the Minnesota Sports Insider Podcast. Just going to recap the Minnesota Vikings preseason game number 2 that happened on Saturday versus the Colts at home. So I'll just go through some of my takeaways, go through some of the positions, and then give you my little summary of the game. I'll keep it to about 10 minutes long about that. So first, we lost, close game, you know, low scoring game, offensively horrendous to watch on both sides of the ball, whether it be Ellinger or Eason or Browning or Mond or Kirk. It was just not a great game to watch if you're a fan of watching quarterbacks, which is a big part of entertainment. So first, I'll just go kind of in order for the Vikings. Kirk Cousins, some of the guys get the start. Basically, no Thielen. We'll get into that. No Jefferson. No Cook. There was just a lot. Main offensive dynamos not there, besides kind of Kirk, the O-line, and our tight ends, basically. So then, you know, you see Kirk playing, and Kirk wasn't completely in rhythm tonight. He had a third down on his first drive. Threw the ball about 5-6 yards out to Adam Thielen. Thielen pulled up. Looked like he had a pulled hamstring or quad or calf, something of that nature. He left the game, so basically didn't play. Looked like Kirk Cousins and the offense struggled to get past third down, to keep moving the ball. They stalled out a couple times around middle of the field. They got one time. They got one time to about the 33-yard line, and they brought out Greg Joseph. Greg Joseph misses a 51-yard field goal. However, it did look like it was pretty close, just barely missed to the right and barely had enough length. The play to get into field goal range was actually a nice play. It's probably one of Kirk's one or two best plays of the night. It was third and long, third and forever kind of thing, and middle of the field. And he ends up running for around the 45 to the 33-yard line to get a chance for Greg Joseph on fourth down. Yeah, we missed it, but that was a nice play to see. So when Kirk Cousins was alluding to earlier this offseason, saying, you know, I watch my tape, I got to use my legs more. That was a nice touch. However, on the counterpoint of that, Rashad Hill kind of got blown by a couple times by Quiddy Pie and ended up sacking Kirk. Not good. It was his blind side. However, I do think that Kirk could have done a better job at stepping up in the pocket, and there was a hole to the left side between the left tackle and his left guard, quite a big hole. So that's something to be – that's interesting, right? So left on the docket here for the first half for the kind of the starters, we saw a little bit of Irv Smith. He, you know, didn't get much action. Had a couple chances, didn't come down with it. I believe he had one catch. Conklin, not much. You know, so we really didn't have many meaningful completions for the receiving group. Running backs, not much to talk about there. Mirodula was he's just kind of irrelevant to me. He's really like a four-string running back at this point, more valuable on special teams, which, again, I don't even know if I value him that much on special teams. His burst is just too slow from a flat-footed standpoint. Or even when he catch, because when you're catching the ball especially as a punt returner, you're catching the ball flat-footed a lot of times to secure the ball, or sometimes you're even on your heels slightly. I know they say to get on your toes, but more times than not, you are flat-footed. So that first two steps are very important, and I just don't think he has that anymore. Going on to the defense, the defense was the positive the whole game for us. Whether it was the first, second, third, fourth, it was as a whole, it was pretty good. I don't know if that's saying a lot because the quarterbacking play was pretty poor for the Colts. Our interior D-line, Dalvin Tomlinson and Michael Pierce, I thought they did a fantastic job. I know they played limited time, but they look like that whole 7-pound grouping right there. That's going to be Like Ben Lieber said, steak and potatoes or steak and eggs, like that's it's just a really good combo to have. The Cleveland are gonna be stopping the run so much better than what we were last year. Weatherly and Wonnum kind of swapped out. They both played okay. Weatherly had a couple tip passes, made a nice tackle. He was all right. And Wonnum was okay. He had one horse collar that wasn't a shouldn't have been called a horse collar. He grabbed him in between the numbers. It is what it is. They made a mistake. I thought he was okay. Linebackers, Kendricks doesn't even need to play. We know who he is. I thought, Troy Dye, besides the touchdown, I thought he was, he was all right. But I wasn't super impressed yet. But he had a couple of nice things, I guess. On the blitz, he kind of read where the hole was and came around nicely, I guess. So that was okay. I thought Chaz Surratt had a pretty good game overall, watching the tape back. Made some nice reads, filled some gaps pretty nicely at times. Then looking at the rest of our DBs here, I enjoyed watching. I thought the guy that stood out to me and happened to be the number one graded guy in PFF. Again, when I talk about PFF, I always try to supplement by rewatching the film. I think you can make a mistake by only relying on PFF. I know it's convenient, but when you do that, a lot of times you might not realize that those stats are kind of pooling everything together and some things weigh differently than other things. And for instance, Troy Dye's intercept pick six is going to weigh very heavy on a score to an extent, or a fumble recovery, or like there's just stats that he could have three bad plays, but he had a pick six, or he had a fumble recovery and it makes his stat look okay. But so when I say, this guy's PFF score looks good, and that, his on the play field looks good, that means he probably played pretty well, So, Breeland had the highest grade out of any Vikings player in week two, now almost a 93 score on PFF out of 100 scale. Very good game. Eye test Matt said there was one time on, I think it was an in or it was a curl, and he just read it perfectly, played off. He was single. And got defended the ball and deflected it. So perfect defense by Breeland, who seemed to be in the hip pocket of the defender a lot of the time. You can slot him in right now, write him in as a starter. And the DBs, Patrick Peterson didn't even need to play really. Like he, yeah. So he's gonna start. Mackenzie Alexander's gonna start. Nothing to really say about that. Then you also have. I thought this was the interesting conversation. Chris Boyd is now officially above Cam Dantzler in the depth chart. He played like it. He had the reps like it early on, and Cam Dantzler played in late into the second half and didn't play well. Made a couple of big mistakes. Got lost in coverage a couple of times. Missed a tackle one time. Just if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm shaking my head like, wow. But this just doesn't look good. But Chris Boyd, on the other hand, I think that shouldn't take away from Chris Boyd, because as bad as he was last year, he needed that experience. And I'm seeing it now that, I mean, he defended Jerry Jeudy a couple times last week really well. And this week he had a couple plays where he was left on an island, single coverage, and he did really well again. Is he the perfect corner? No, I'm not saying that. I would say Breland's actually probably our best corner when it's all said and done this year, for actually when he's on one-on-ones. So we'll see, but I'm really liking Chris Boyd. I mean, as him as our fourth corner potentially, it's interesting. I have an interesting theory too. Like, I don't even know if Cam Dantzler is gonna be our sixth, or sorry, our fifth cornerback on our depth chart, because I think Harrison Hand might be our fifth between between Breland, Peterson, Alexander, and Boyd, and then Hand. I have a Hand over Dancer right now. If I'm going purely off of watching a couple practices and watching two preseason games, that's how I would evaluate that. So it's just disappointing, but it's also impressive that Hand and Boyd have not just like been better because of Dancer being horrible. It's actually because they've also looked like pretty solid players that could play in an NFL on a field on Sunday. So that's a positive, I guess. Overall, our defense, when they started, limited time, they look very good. It looks like to be, a fringe, if not a, a you know, 8th to 10th best defense. I know that's a talking early in the season, but I could see him as a fringe top 10 defense this year, fairly safe. O-line, we'll get to O-line right now. So funny enough, we actually had our best, some of our best graded PFF scores, three of the top five scores from the Vikings' entire roster in the interior part of our offensive line. Why is that important? Because last year we had the worst interior line, O-line in terms of every football team in the NFL. 45 to 52 grades is a below, much below average score. And between Bradbury and Dozier and Samia, those were three of the top 10 worst scores for interior O-linemen. Bad. I thought Bradbury has played pretty solid so far in the preseason. I think he's taken a little bit of a step with his drop and his anchor in the pass pro. And then run game, we all know Bradbury can push and get to a spot, and he's pretty quick to get to it. Looking at Cleveland, I've been really impressed. Might be a really good second round pick out of Boise State. Cleveland's been really solid at left guard. I think he's going to be at least average. And I mean, only let one pressure, and that was about it. I mean, he didn't really get beat when I watched the tape again. And then the top grading O lineman, and he's taken the preseason by storm in terms of our O line is Ole Udo. He had a high 80s grade, was great, didn't allow any pressure, didn't miss any assignments, played great, did a phenomenal job. And once again, for the second straight, oh, sorry, for the entire preseason and now week two, it's just been his looked phenomenal. It's weird to say that. It's weird to say that, but it looks like he can seriously be our starting right guard, and he'll be average. Like, at least again. So our interior is definitely looking like it's taking a step up from last year. And even some of the pockets that Cousins was getting, besides that one time where Rashad Hill made a mistake, and Rashad Hill is the guy I'll get to last, is he did not look very good at left tackle. He got blown by Kwity Pie a couple times. It was concerning. Speed rush easily got past him. And you know what? It's not Rashad Hill's fault. He's supposed to be a backup swing tackle. So what can we expect of him? A backup swing tackle. That's what you're getting. Fortunately, we've moved on from Reef. Could be a huge mistake. Hopefully, we get a chance. Maybe we sign Russell Okung. That could help. So that's, it's just tough. We'll see. Maybe I think there's some rumblings that after this next preseason game, and I don't even know if they play Reef in this final preseason game, you could hear some news this week or next week about the Vikings coming to an extension with Brian O'Neill and a multi-year deal. Expect anything north of $13 million for O'Neill per year. I think he'll get somewhere between 13 and 15 million per year. Maybe I'm thinking a little too north. Maybe it's more 10 to 12, but he is graded out in every way as an above average right tackle, and he's quite young. So, and maybe you move some money with an extension, and you move some money around so he gets a little more later or kind of thing, and you create some extra cap space to maneuver, whether it's a trade or a free agent signing, to get another tackle on the left side. So that is my idea or thought. Another guy to think about again, Harrison Smith, might get locked up in a 2 or 3 year extension with the Vikings to finish out his career as a Minnesota Viking, being the longest tenured Viking that currently on the Minnesota roster. So my summary of the day basically was, I was disappointed with some of the play calling. Was it vanilla maybe? Was Kubiak maybe just trying to, not give away too much? Maybe, yeah, absolutely, it's a possibility, and he probably did to an extent, but I'm just concerned because you want to get in rhythm, you want to get in the flow, and now I'm thinking, well, I hope the first stringers like Kirk actually do get in rhythm, and you're gonna have to take a chance by playing them in week three. There's always a question: do you want them healthy, or do you want them in rhythm to start off the year? It's a tough question because we saw Thielen limp off the field, but on the other hand, we know that Kirk Cousins has gotten off to slow starts historically. And Zimmer's teams have gone off to some slow starts more times than not the last few, four, 3 or 4 years here. So do you really want to take a chance at having that same slow start, and then you get all this pressure put on you and get behind the eight ball. So it's a tough line to figure out, but you're gonna have to make some decisions at some point this week if you're gonna play Kirk, and quite frankly, I think I'd give him one or two drives just to see if he can get more rhythm or figure some things out or get his eyes just adjusted to getting some reads down and progressing through it. So, but also back to Clint Kubiak, you understand that Gary, his dad, was a great offensive coordinator. He got us to be a top five offense last year. Whether you liked the way he called plays or not, we were top five. And that's just the truth in terms of points scored. Just because his son is, related to him doesn't mean he's going to be a good coordinator his first year. I mean, a lot of times, a first-year coordinator has a lot big learning curve, especially when he's the youngest guy play caller in the NFL right now. So he's got a tough, ride ahead of him this year. And yeah, you can call his dad, but I just have a little bit of concern with some of his play calling. But again, it's preseason. It's hard to be. I shouldn't even be judging that yet until at least one or two games into the regular season. But it's something to be aware of that you should be looking at is how is the play calling when we get to the Bengals game and how that affects the offense. So that's kind of my takeaway. The defense looks like it could be a fringe top 10 defense pretty safely if I were to bet on that. And if we can just get an average offense and a top 10 defense, you're probably going to be in the running for a playoff team. But we'll see if we can get healthy, see how Thielen does, and we'll see if Anthony Barr can get healthy. See what's going on. Zimmer alluded to after the game that it's not anything to do with the last injury he had with his pectoral injury. It's something else that's been nagging him. The last point I want to get to is the quarterbacks. Don't want to talk about them too much. Overall, a subpar performance between Mond, Browning, and Kirk. The offense never got in rhythm. The play calling never seemed to be in like the right play call. It's tough to say, but Browning came in halfway through the second quarter, about 8 minutes left, didn't do much, stalled it out, three and out, first two drives. They got a third drive to end the first half. He actually did move the ball. However, it looked like the Colts were just playing kind of not necessarily prevent, but more of like a three deep with a lot of space between the linebackers and or the D line and some of the safeties and DBs. Took some chunk plays, got to field goal position. Fortunately, we got to the 31-yard line. So I guess that was a small positive for Browning. I'm not sure how much we should take away from that since, again, different kind of defense at the end of the first half. Maybe too conservative by the Colts. Nonetheless, we get into field goal range. 49-yard field goal. Greg Joseph hits it, puts it to the uprights, and it's good. Hits barely enough with his leg to get it over. And both those kicks overall, I thought were pretty accurate for being about 50-yard kicks. So that's been nice to see. Doesn't look like he has all that much power. Maybe he's just trying to get more accuracy and take away power to get more accuracy. But, maybe he's just a guy where if you're taking the field goal, you don't want it any longer than 54, 55 max. And that's fine. As long as he can hit and be accurate from, the important spots, which and to me are between that 40 to 50-yard shots. Like you just get we need those, as much as possible. So, on to Mond comes in the second half. Didn't look good. Looked like he was a little slow going through reads at times. Looked like he was dancing out of the pocket a little too early at times, and the pocket was fine. Sometimes he was just getting pressured and he didn't have great O-line play in front of him. The very first play that he took in the second half, he actually, well, I could not tell from the replay if it was more in the center or him. It was close. I'm not sure. But the fumbled snap, and he had to land on it. Maybe that kind of startled him a little bit in front of all the fans. Who knows? But he just missed a couple easy reads a couple times. A couple times he actually was a little inaccurate, which is not, I'd say that's a little. Not always, that's not very normal for Kellen Mond. I've known him to be fairly accurate when I watch him, especially even last week in his limited time when he had six completions. The six that I did see, I was pretty impressed by the accuracy in which the pressure was being at his feet. So overall, pretty poor performance for from Kellen. He did throw an interception late in the game, literally with like 10 seconds left. Just kind of throwing like a 30, 40-yard pass. Not a great pass, but I'm not sure how much we should put stock into that interception. Just kind of a late game. We were down by a few things. So quarterback play calling, not so great. And we'll see if the, yeah, we'll have to see if the starters end up playing anytime in Kansas City on Friday. I'll see you then. Bye.